Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, Sal, you were there. Tre'Davious White leaves practice injured today. What did it look like?
All right, so the practice was inside the stadium today, and we were, as a media group, basically in the one end of the stadium. It was the tunnel end, but, you know, in the kind of the corner area, and we were all watching. And Tre'White, after an 11-on-11 play, we could see something, like the media saw something. We didn't see it was like kind of not, he wasn't near the play. You're not following the ball. If you're following the ball, you're not seeing him. It was kind of through the players, right? So there was a couple of media members said, hey, what's that over there? It looks like someone's hurt. And we all looked over and it was Tre'White and he was like hopping on one foot. Now you're like, oh crap, right? You know, because of the injury history there. So we knew that was the case. So watching him, didn't see exactly what happened. Didn't see if he got stepped on or if it was non-contact. Just could not tell, to be honest with you. So we see him hopping a little bit, and then we see Mitch Trubisky basically go over to him and walk him over to the sidelines. And as he's doing that, he's still hopping on one foot. Then he goes over, and he's with trainers basically. They walk over to the wall area, and Trey looked like he was upset. He was like kind of hitting the wall like he was upset, talking with trainers, standing on both feet at that point, talking with trainers. I would say he's there for about maybe 2-3 minutes. It probably seemed like longer. That was probably what it is. And then eventually he started walking on his own with a trainer trailing him, walked across the field, like the end zone area, walked all the way up the tunnel into the game day locker room, which is on the back of the tunnel there, not close to the field. It's on the other side. Walked into the locker room there, and we didn't see him for a little while. And then a few minutes later, took a look, and he was back. He had walked down, and I didn't actually see him physically walk down, but clearly he did. He walked down back towards the field and stood there and watched a little bit of practice and then got into a cart sitting in the front seat, and then they drove off through the tunnel back towards wherever they went.
Well, we've talked about him a lot. A lot's riding on him, it seems, with the Hairston injury and the Bills having some uncertainty, maybe to put it mildly, at that position. And you've liked how he's looked, I think.
Yeah, I've liked it, except for some times. I think it's been inconsistent. I liked how he looked maybe in a couple of practices. I haven't liked how he looked in a couple of practices. I didn't think he was particularly strong in the Bears joint practice, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I think he's had some really good days. One day he was the best player on the field at training camp, and I think a couple other days he's not been as good. So yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to like, but there's also some concerns. That being said, he's clearly a starting cornerback. I mean, that's what he is right now. He is the starting cornerback opposite Christian Benford. Now, on a related note, Christian Benford also ended his practice early, and he didn't go back out for team reps. And I don't know if he walked all the way, like, out of the field, but he went off the field, off the practice field. And we did talk to him after practice, and he said he was fine. He just needed some rest, but that's okay. But if anybody saw that report out there, that's, you know, what happened with Christian Benford. But look, man, I mean, you know, Tre'Davious White is the starting cornerback, and until Max Harrison's ready, that's going to be what it is. And if he's out for any significant time, then it really brings into question what you have. And to me, I mean, the next guy up to me would be Dane Jackson. Now, I know that doesn't sit well with a lot of fans. The reason why I say that is I would think the Bills would want to lean on a little more experience on the outside and a guy that has started for them before. Could you put Jamarcus Ingram in there? Sure. But Jamarcus Ingram plays so many positions for them. He's so valuable. I don't think you would pigeonhole him just to start on the outside. I think you would have Dane Jackson in order to have Jamarcus Ingram available to do other things. That's why I say I think Dane Jackson would be the next man up.
Mm-hmm. The obvious name from the outside here, Sal, would be Rasul Douglas. A caller asked about him a short time ago. And my thought on him is just how they went to Tre'White early in the offseason in the first place. But yeah, it might have been the case that Douglas was looking for more than Tre'White would have gotten here in a deal somewhere else in free agency. Now it's August 21st. He doesn't have it. I wonder, you know, it's not just White, but maybe even Benford, dare I say it, depth pieces too, just injuries. And of course, Hairston, he would be the name on the tip of your tongue, but is there a reason you might think where the Bills like just would never call him, or is there someone else? Like, what do you think of Douglas as a, I mean, it's a red flag if he signs, right? Because then they're probably concerned about where they're headed with their injuries.
Yeah, well, would I say never? No, I think that, you know, you never say never. I mean, if they're in a spot where they need somebody, I think the first thing you do is get somebody who knows the system. You don't have to onboard them as quickly, right? I mean, you go get somebody who you can plug and play and say, hey, you know what our calls are. You've played with this group before. And, you know, Rasul did that for a year and a half. I'd also say, I think I share that I know a lot of fans saying that today, but I think a lot of those same fans would say and go back and look that he wasn't as good last year, right? Yeah. There were a lot of times where you felt he just wasn't giving you what he did the year before that when they got him in a trade. So what does he have left? What is he right now? And the fact that he hasn't signed anywhere, we don't know what that means. Could that be what you just said, Mike, which is he's just asking for too much money and a team just like, I don't want to do that? Or has he gone and he's met with teams and like, not really what we want right now because he's not really what we thought he was or could be or, you know, still is, those kind of, that kind of thing. So you never know. I mean, but he's still out there as a free agent, and that sometimes should tell you something. So, but would I say never? Of course not. I think if there's something significant, I think a guy like that would be, I mean, what are your other options and alternatives? You're not getting a draft pick at this point, obviously. I think you just have to wait for Max Hairston then to be ready and hope that he can play. I do want to add, though, a couple things about Tre'Davious White, because I think that this is just context that needs to be out there after tweeting and reporting today and reading a lot of people. Number one, I've seen a lot of reports, even people saying, attributing to me or other reporters there, saying he was carted off the field. I think that's not correct when you think of the way people are carted off a field. Tre'Davious White did ultimately leave the field while sitting in a cart. He walked all the way up the stadium tunnel into the locker room. Then he walked back down the stadium tunnel to where the cart was. It also is a long walk. And if he's going to go outside the stadium, which obviously he did after that, and at that point, I think you have to take into context that they're not going to have him, you know, basically walking and doing that. If he's got to go outside the stadium and over to the other locker room and the training facility, they're going to bring a cart for him. So I want that, number one. Number two, Mike, it is notable to me, and I don't know what – I don't have to say this means something or doesn't mean something, but it is notable to me that the head athletic trainer, Nate Bresky, wasn't walking with him up the tunnel. It was a trainer. There was someone there. But I just noted that it wasn't the head athletic trainer, right? Doesn't have to mean anything. I'm just saying, in my experience, a lot of times, like, it will be him, you know, in those situations where there's something
scared,
concerning, right?
Right.
So,
yeah, mm-hmm.
I like I said, I don't want to necessarily have to read anything into that, but I do want to make note of it.
Sal Capaccio on the West Hur Hotline. Mike Shope here, Bulldog, is off today. Just to put a bow on this regarding White, so tomorrow is a travel day. Is there any reason to think there will be an update? Of course, somebody could just break in at some point and, like, this is what he's got. But is there anything official tomorrow that could tell us the news?
No, there's no media availability tomorrow, so we will not hear anything. The only way we would know, I think, before Saturday. Now, Saturday night's a long way away, right? We got, you know, 48 hours here plus before they play a game. I guess what I'm waiting for is, does he show up in Tampa in the stadium? And is he with his teammates? Is he in uniform? Is he on the sidelines? I think that's the next thing to see. It is very possible that he doesn't make the trip, but it doesn't have to mean that it's also a majorly serious injury. I'll give you an example. Last week, Cam Lewis didn't make the trip with the Bills. Cam Lewis was practicing this week. So you just never know how they handle these things.
Mm-hmm, right. So there was also a fight today, and it sounded like a pretty good one.
Yeah, I guess good relative to, like, a lot of bodies and a lot of people in there, right? I mean, it's football players pushing and shoving. Basically what happened was Taylor Rapp kind of gave Elijah Moore a shot, and Elijah Moore, like, pushed, threw the ball back at him, tossed it back at him, whatever. That exchanged some words, and a whole bunch of guys just started gathering around. Next thing you know, people are pushing and shoving. They're getting hands on each other. And then guys were on the ground. And I looked down, and A.J. Epenesa is on the ground, but I don't know if he was pushed on the ground. He fell. Deion Dawkins pulls him out of there. He gets up. They start talking to each other. They kind of sort of put hands on each other. They weren't really fisticuffs or anything. And there was a lot of words exchanged between a lot of people. That was after a little while before that. It looked like to me DeMar Hamlin had hit, I think it might have been Ray Davis coming through the hole or somebody. Like there was a, maybe it was Elijah Moore. My apologies. But he did hit somebody, like give him a shot. And even Josh Allen came in and said something when everybody kind of gathered in. So it was chippy today. And Sean McDermott said before practice he was going to have the ones practice today and go ones against ones. And they were going to have to get some, I think he said, like conditioning in or, you know, making sure that kind of thing. And he said they're not going to like me much for it. So it could have just been seriously like people are just on edge because they're not happy that that has to happen. But I think Sean's plan was let's do this so these guys don't have to play tomorrow, Saturday.
Do you have – that's interesting. Do you have a take on Rapp? This, wasn't it Kincaid that went out yesterday from a hit by Taylor Rapp? And then I'm not sure if I'm right here, but I read somewhere that he might have been kicked out of practice for this one. So is he crossing lines as you see it?
Yeah, I did not see him get kicked out, but one of my colleagues and a couple of my colleagues did say that, so I'll trust that I didn't see that happen, but I was focused on what was happening. So if that was the case, yes, they did report that. My take is that you have to know the situation and the moment in the practice, and I love the fact that he goes hard. I love the fact that he wants to practice and be there, but you know, you have to understand, you know, what the situation is. I will tell you, yesterday against Dalton Kincaid, I mean, Taylor Rapp went up to make a play on the ball. So did Dalton Kincaid. And I think they're just going hard. And, you know, just because of the way Dalton's body was kind of, you know, angled, that it might have happened and been more severe than it should have been. You know, it's always tough. I try to really understand, being around football my whole life, Mike, that these are football players who are playing football. And yes, as much as you're not supposed to hit or take to the ground, you're also supposed to try to make a play, right? And sometimes those things happen. But I do think there's times where, and Taylor Rapp specifically has been kind of in the middle of this a little bit, I do think there's times where you have to know when to kind of let up and not let that be a part of your game in that situation.
We've talked about a lot this week even, some uncertainty at safety beyond Rapp with Bishop and what their options are. How good a player is Rapp for you?
Well, good is relative, I guess. I think he's super important for the Buffalo Bills. You know, that position is really important for what they need for guys, and he kind of does everything for them. I don't know if you saw my tweet yesterday. I don't think we talked about it specifically, but yesterday I asked Bobby Babich about the evolution of safety, and it used to be free and strong, and now there's just two safeties, and Bobby loved it, and he's like, yeah, I love talking about this stuff. And he talked about how he came from the 46 defense, 46 single it was called, and that was Doug Plank's jersey number, right, and all that. And I think, you know, Taylor Rapp is kind of the new age kind of safety that Bobby Babich is referring to, which is he can play deep center field, but he can come up in the box. And this is what we're talking about, right? He's a physical guy. But you need guys who can do everything there. And that's what the new wave, new age type of safety is. That's what they're thinking Cole Bishop can be. You know, no longer really is, well, you just have a guy who's a thumper. You know, that was back in the day. You just have a guy who's center field. I think it's more important for the Bills and their defense, by the way he talked, have guys who can really play center field, because he said playing in space is really important. But the other reason why Taylor Rapp is important, and I'll go back to what Sean McDermott said back at the owners' meetings, I believe it was, Combine maybe, I think owners' meetings. He said Taylor Rapp basically does what Terrell Bernard does for them, for the secondary. He sets their defense. He's a super important piece for them, and we all know how, you know, that's that is something they really rely on there. So good, yeah, I think he's made some plays, no doubt. Is he, you know, an elite safety in this league? No. He had some interceptions. I think that he's progressed, like, from where he was when he first signed. He was behind Micah and Jordan. But I think he's important for what they do.
Who's your all-time favorite safety?
All-time favorite safety.
Ronnie Lott is the first name I think of. I'm not sure I couldn't come up with somebody that I liked more, but, you know, not a Bill.
I might say that. I might go to Steve Atwater.
All right. Atwater, same mold.
Yeah, Atwater was just, he was a thumper, but he could do a lot of things too. I mean, you know, how can you not love Kelso and Smith? Now that is the true, you want to talk about old school style of safeties and how teams played it. That is a true strong and free, right? That's Leonard Smith.
No doubt.
And Mark Kelso. And I always tell, I told a story before, and I don't know if I've told to you, but I remember being in high school and I go to a game and the Bills got beat on a couple post patterns. I go back to Cleve Hill the next day, and I'm at football practice, and I say to my old defensive coordinator, athletic director, Carl Curris, who founded the Trench Trophy, I said, Coach, you know, why do the Bills get beat on these post patterns, right? They have these really good safeties. And he said, because Leonard Smith is too undisciplined to stay in his zone. He wants to hit everybody. And Mark Kelso's not fast enough to cover for him. That's what he said. Yep. It was great. And I'm like, yeah, that's right. I understand now.
Sounds right to me. Basically, I could buy that explanation. We talked yesterday about Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer and their importance to the Bills in their years, McDermott's history. McDermott also had Brian Dawkins for 10 years when he was on the Philadelphia staff. There's an all-time great, too.
No doubt, yeah. I mean, you talk about some of these guys that McDermott has had, and that's one of them. You know, McDermott talks about Brian Dawkins a lot. Like, he refers to him as one of these guys, like talking about the safety play that they've had, you know, over the years and where he's been at Philadelphia and Carolina. So, you know, he's done a really good job of developing safeties. And he's also had the opportunity to work with really talented safeties, and it's kind of been the perfect match. You know, and right now it's a bit of a concern. I like what he said about Cole Bishop today, though, that, you know, he likes where Cole Bishop's going right now. He likes the progression. He used the word callous again. You have to build up the callous. You have to, you know, failure's the best teacher, and I think this is Bobby yesterday. Failure's the best teacher, and, you know, making sure that, you know, going through these tough times is really important for a lot of these guys. So, yeah, I like what I'm hearing from them, but, you know, now you have to go put it into play and see him do it.
Just a couple of minutes left with Sal Capaccio here on the Western Hotline. How about Saturday night? We found out that Josh Allen will not play in this game. No surprise, really. Do you expect any of the starters to play? I mean, thinking about, again, Trey White, whether he makes the trip, you sort of read into that a little bit, what it could mean. Would you have thought he would have been on the field if he were healthy, though?
No, I don't. Sean even said today, he at that, like, when he met with us this morning, he said at this time he didn't anticipate most of the starters playing, but he said everybody's a case-by-case basis. We asked him about Curtis Samuel, for example, because he hasn't had that time. And he used, this is a good example, right, of how you're going to have to think about this. He said, well, you know, Curtis was missing this time, and, you know, you might think that he would play, but he actually really liked what he's likes what he's done over the last couple of days since he's been back. You know, is that a guy that you need now to see on the field, or has he done enough over the last few days to say he doesn't need to be on the field and you have two more weeks to get him ready here? So I think that's a good example right there. I do think Cole Bishop will play, though. I think you have to have him back on the field to get more of those reps to, I'll use Sean's word again, callous, you know, to go through those things again, to understand. And I would expect, though, Mike, honestly, that I think Saturday night probably looks a lot like, personnel-wise, it did last Sunday night.
Well, maybe the Bucs will cooperate, unlike the Bears. And I would expect this, actually. The Bills are favored in the game, so somebody else is expecting it, too, that they're not going to. We know we're not going to see most of Tampa's, if not all of Tampa's, top guys. Got to be fun for you. Looking forward to Tampa.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, go down there tomorrow night and then have all day Saturday, and I have some friends down there and been trying to coordinate. My buddy, who you've had on the air before, TJ Reeves, the sideline reporter for the Buccaneers, trying to get together with him maybe if we can. We'll see how it goes, but yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, you look forward to these warmer weather trips when they're a little bit later in the year. Tampa at this time of year is going to be pretty hot. So, but that's okay. Not complaining at all. But yeah, for sure. I have some friends down there. I got a friend who's a really, really big Bills fan, and him and his family, and they're driving up maybe about an hour from where they live down a little south of Sarasota. And, you know, he calls me and says, hey, you want to get together for lunch with my mom and dad? They haven't seen you in a while. So that kind of thing is pretty cool, you know?
I talked to John Ledyard earlier and was just looking up the Buccaneers. It didn't hit me right away that they have won that division 4 years in a row, going back to back to Brady, and not always with great records. 1 year they were 8-9 and won it. But yeah, they're on a 4 year NFC South title streak.
You know, it's funny too, they come here this year and it's always weird that it's weird for me this year that the Bills are playing them in the preseason and playing them in the regular season. I did ask Mike North about that when the schedule came out. Hey, you know, how does that happen? He said they really, the league does it, it's not the teams, and it's the third preseason game, so you're not probably expecting the starters, and because they don't play until later in the year, but I still think it's kind of weird that happened. Then I was thinking today, Mike, you know this, because I know you know this, but the Buccaneers were the only team that had never visited Highmark Stadium, currently Highmark Stadium, for many years. And then they did, what, 09 maybe? Dante Whitner, right, has a nice play there, and T.O. And then since then, though, now the last few years, this will be the third time in the last several years they've been here. This
yes.
is the regular season, I mean, when they play.
Yes. 09, 17, and 23. The 23 game, the Thursday night game, it was the so-called 17th game, the extra, you know, both first-place teams. That game that, what, the game ended on a failed Hail Mary?
Yes, yeah, Tampa. I remember that. It fell harmlessly to the earth, but man, if someone turns around, it might not have fallen harmlessly to the earth. I saw Chris Godwin's going to start returning for them very soon, and they're hoping he's ready for October. The Bills play them in November, so you know, that's something to monitor there. And yeah, that would be, what, three times? This would be the third time in 9 years then that Tampa comes to Buffalo, which is kind of odd for an NFC team.
Right, that extra game does give you that. Yep. All right. Very good. Thank you, Sal. Enjoy the trip down.
All right, thanks.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. His appearance is brought to you by Your Place to Buy a Case, New York's only outlet liquor. What's your outlet? In the 80s, I mean, I don't need to do a whole thing on this. Who even cares? It's so long ago. But you finished last five-team divisions. There were 5 and 4. If you finished last in a five-team division, you would play the other fifth-place team from your conference home and away. So the Bills and Chiefs had at least 1 year of that, I think 86. And then you'd play the fifth-place team or teams from the other conference, and that was the Bucs. So a couple of those games, the Bills and the Bucs in the 80s, at least one would have been that, just fifth-place team versus another. Because you'd get left out of the division matchups that we get every year now in the NFL. Every division is four teams. So as a rule, you know, this year it's the NFC South. The Bills play everybody. Then that extra game is the Philadelphia game, two first-place teams matching up way down the road after Christmas. 803-0550 is the number. I don't think you'll have a thought on that necessarily, but Trey White going down to some extent at practice today. We'll see what we find out here in the next while. May not be until, like Sal even said, Saturday night before we get any kind of word on that. But that stuff does often get out. So we have that to talk about and more, and we will continue after the update. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
He's an explosive talent, and like anything, you start overusing them, they're going to get wear and tear, and all of a sudden, you don't see the same explosive player. So it's us utilizing that. James is a guy that we do think can be a three-down player. It doesn't mean everything's perfect. There's some little things that he's already been working on and will continue to work on, but we're excited with where he's at, and he's still a young talent. And as we've said in here, don't think he's been overtaxed or a guy that, like, man, the tread on his tires is getting worn by any means.
Bills GM Brandon Bean, Mike Shope and the Bulldog here. So, what is your guess to the question of whether this new contract for James Cook means more time on the field? Should it? Will it? I keep going back to, without ever hardly thinking about contract stuff, what the Bills have been of late as an offense has worked really well, and that includes Cook being off the field for more than half their plays. So why would they change it? They might think they need more from him at what will be his new pay rate, even though this year he went up, but his contract isn't until after. Would you expect the Bills to play him more often?
I would say no. I mean, could it go from, what was it, around 47% last year? Could it, you know, just situationally, you know, maybe they're in tighter games and he's, you know, what to 52%, maybe 55%. Like, I don't think it's going to be significant. I just don't think they would have invested in Ty Johnson. It's modest, but still, like, if he were someone that you were thinking you weren't going to use in the same role, or maybe even a little bit more often, who knows, then I don't think you you commit to him the way they did. And I think you want to be careful to not use him. It's great that he doesn't have worn tires, to use Bean's metaphor there. Going back to college, even now into 3 years into the NFL, he's got a low amount of carries and touches for someone who plays running back. That's good. I wouldn't want to change that now that I've paid him. If anything, I want to make sure I protect that so that I can get, you know, it's a 4-year deal, really ostensibly 3 for $30. I can get 4 more seasons out of him using him the way I'm using him and max that out, rather than for a guy who's not a big, thick, bruising guy, more of a finesse type runner. I think I want to keep using him the same way. I think you pay him to keep using him like you're using him. I think it would be very bad process to go, well, we paid him, so now we got to use him 69 or 70% of the time or something. Their offense worked extremely well with the guys in the roles that they had. And provided that Ray Davis still proves to be a dependable, you know, backup running back to spell Cook on, you know, just any down, not, you know, like Johnson has a very specific role. You know, Davis is more just Cook is tired, you know, or just let's get you one every fourth series. We're going to get you out there, that kind of thing. Provided you feel like you can depend on Davis to keep doing that there isn't some huge drop-off, or you're just not getting, you know, every time he's out there, you're in 2nd and 9 if you hand it to him or something, which I don't foresee. I don't think there's any reason to change Cook's usage. It's tempting. I think it's a reasonable question to ask. You know, fans have been, the whole time we've been debating whether to pay him or not, and then since they paid him, you know, there's always somebody ready to tell you what a crime against football it was that he wasn't on the field at the end of the Chiefs game. And, you know, that really tells me you're predisposed to wanting to use him more. Now they've paid him, so you're going to want to use him more. And I just would say, like, just be careful about that. What I want them to do, what I think they'll do, is what I'm suggesting. And it's one of these situations where I think it lines up. Like what I would do and what I think they'll do, I really am confident are the same thing.
That's a theme today.
I guess so.
There's nothing wrong with it. It's how we are as people, right? We sort of expect a certain thing, or you said it better than I am, want a certain thing, and then something comes along that makes you think that'll be confirmed. Confirmation bias. A little bit different from what you're saying, but still. Yeah. That's also for me, you know, just what you can get into trouble. I'm not saying there has to be a massive change, but just a minor one. You can get into trouble trying to build your thing, your machine, based on those kind of incentives. We have to play this guy. We drafted him in the first round. Now we're paying him $8 million a year versus $2 million, whatever those things can be. And I think optimally, your team does not care about that. But in real life, yep, maybe you do.
I mean, I have no argument for anyone who wants to call us and tell us he's their best running back and maybe their most proven, dependable offensive weapon outside of Allen. Yes, you're absolutely right. But to keep it, to optimize it, to make it keep working, I think, although the temptation, you know, it's pro sports, get the best guys out there, what are you doing? Like, I get that. I just think he's someone who's been successful being used this way, and that doesn't mean that it's proven that he can't be used more and still be effective, but I just think there's a balance there, and I think you run a risk of messing with a good thing if you do it. Do it that way. So I just would not. I would not want to. And like I said, I mean, the game situations may vary. I think you've alluded to this. You know, if they're in different kinds of games, you know, obviously if they're way ahead, then, you know, your number two running back or number three running back should probably be carrying the ball on those run out the clock type drives in the fourth quarter. But if those games are tight, then maybe his usage can tick up a bit. But I wouldn't expect it to be significant You know, I don't think it's going to go from 47 to like 67 or something. I don't think that's in the cards. I don't think it would be smart, and I happen to think that the Bills are smart. Like, I don't agree with every choice they make, see receiver, but I think they have their heads on straight about things like this, usage and what works, and if it ain't broke and that kind of thing. And their backfield and their offense in general, really, is far from broken. But especially how they use their running backs. Johnson excelled in his role. Davis had a nice rookie season for a point of entry. And Cook scored 16 rushing touchdowns. Why do I want to risk anything by changing that? I think it's really a perfect setup.
Something has to change to them first, I would say, too. 22 running backs last year had more than 200 carries. Among them, Cook comes in last in snap share, 44.6. That 47, I hear 47, does that include the playoffs or why?
I don't know, but I've heard 44 and 47, and I don't want to be accused of slanting it by using the lower number, so I default to the higher number, but I'm not sure which one is 100%
there accurate. Might be a nuance here I'm missing, but no. According to StatHead, 44.6 was his number last year. That ranks last of 22 running backs that carried more than 200 times. He was at 207. Right above him is Bucky Irving, who went for 1,100 yards and 5.5 yards per carry for Tampa at 45%. At the top is Kyren Williams of the Rams at 81.5%. Bijan, Barkley are 2 and 3.
Wow, I wonder where those numbers, because the number I've heard on Kyren Williams when he signed his contract was 87%. And this is 81, so maybe it is playoffs.
Offensive snap percentage is what I've got. Maybe there's. I'll look to see if there's a different slant to that. Here's Sal with us. Hello, Sal. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Thank you for calling us.
Good. I kind of had a twofold question for you. Number one, in the wide receiver, how many we're going to keep? You think any of those guys have special teams swag that'll get them in, that can get them above a guy they may be better than?
I think
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Go ahead.
My other question would have been just hearing the James Cook thing. I always fear guys that after they sign that big contract, I always think in a perfect world, you get 11 guys that are all in their last year of their contract and you're going to get the best out of them.
Well, I want to give most of these guys, if not all of them, more respect than that. I think, you know, Josh Allen made a monster deal and did one person question his motivation or incentive after doing that? I think that is insulting to players that like they won't give me their best if they've been paid, you know, in advance, if you will.
Yeah. On the receiver question as it pertains to special teams, Shavers has started being used on some punt coverage, but it's been pretty minimal. It's not like he's heavy in the rotation there. Beyond that, it's mostly depth guys. I think the name for this now, as we get this far into camp and cut down day is now less than a week away, right? Next Tuesday is that day. I feel like Chenault is the guy for this. My understanding is he's been working on the coverage units. You're seeing him return kicks, of course, which he's done in college and in the NFL, and the Bills have even been giving him a spin at punt returner, which I think is notable because they had an excellent punt and kick returner in Codrington last year who really just cannot be on the field as a defender. Like, it's just not – it's not any place you want to be. And if they think Chenault can handle both return jobs – and be something on offense, which, you know, it's going to be he's a depth guy, but it's a way to make sure you get him a uniform and maybe you can use him on some different things. He's got more of a bigger body than they have outside of Coleman, really. I feel like Chenault is the guy I'd be looking toward. Like, when I'm thinking about finding a way to divest myself of Curtis Samuel, it's not to say like Chenault replaces Samuel, because I think everyone would just move up one notch. Samuel might be four on the depth chart, followed by Moore and then Shavers. I think those guys all would bump up one. Chenault becomes your sixth guy, but he's getting a uniform because he's a core special teams guy. I don't think they have another guy that is being utilized that's realistic to make the roster. I mean, KJ Hamler also has return ability. I don't know that he's making your team at this point. I feel like Chenault, they're giving that a look, and I think it's probably there's intent behind it.
Do you think he looks good?
I think he looks all right. I mean, I don't know. I think he looks fine is the best I can do.
Fine at best, I was going to say.
Yeah, I don't know. But
I'm not watching Hard Knocks, though, and you are.
I think I didn't really see him on Hard Knocks at all.
No?
Hamler's been a star on Hard Knocks.
Really?
Yeah.
What's up with that?
He had the little scooter.
I love a scooter.
He had a little scooter, like a little kid scooter, and there's a big personality there. He was featured again last night in some like team building exercise they did with a game that they had a guy come in and play with everybody, and Hamler was central in that. Anyway.
Was it interesting?
It was maybe the most interesting thing about the show. The show is, I think the show is on borrowed time. Like, I don't know what the numbers will be. I know Bills fans are loving it. I'm enjoying watching it. But it's not anything like Hard Knocks was known for being anymore. It's a team movie.
The shark has been jumped?
Yeah.
With Hard
Knocks?
So,
I don't know if viewership is still up, they'll keep making it, I think. But if the numbers take a hit, like, I would expect objective football fans. I'm not seeing any like reviews outside of Bills fans going, I love it because Deion Dawkins is driving a drift car around a parking lot and, you know, whatever. And again, I'm enjoying all that, but fans around the league watching it, looking for the stuff that Hard Knocks was known for, I would think are going, this is like a PR video. Like, what am I doing?
Have they even had a fight?
So I just don't – I think it's on borrowed time. I don't know.
Have they even had one fight? Hard Knocks wants to be in Tennessee where the quarterback is fighting guys, or in New England where the coach is involved in scraps.
There was a scrap in the joint practice from last night.
That's right.
And I think McDermott was heard yelling for Alec Anderson to stay out of it. Like, don't get in there, Alec. Don't get in there.
Let him work it out.
Worried he's going to get in there and make it worse.
That guy has a trident.
Yeah. Right. So anyway, Chenault, I feel like Chenault, I think when camp started, I thought he was easy to even forget about that he was on the team. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know. I want to go so far as to say I'd be surprised if he doesn't make it, but it won't surprise me if he does.
See what Sal says coming up at 5. Thanks for the call, Sal. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog here at WGR.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yes. Welcome back. It's exciting. It's in prime time tonight, sort of.
It's prime time as we get.
That's right. This hour is as prime time as we get. Reverse AFC power rankings powered by Empire Electric, your residential neighborhood electrician. Visit empireelectricians.com. I can barely hear the music. It is there, right?
Okay, yes.
All right, good. All right. Last time around, August 8th, yourself and Sal, I believe, with Zach.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
B minus on the writing, I would say. You just sort of, you slanted right a little bit there, but
yeah,
not bad.
It got late. I tried. I said this even on the air. I tried to match your writing. So yep. That it would look the same, but I don't write the same as you, so it took effort, and that's why I probably trailed to the right. I just wasn't, I was trying to do too much.
with your C, you do that little line at the start, at the beginning with the C, down and then around, rather than just around. You have that little that line. Mm. Is there a name for that? The little hook on your C.
Chris is the name for it.
We'll try to tighten things up. Clearly, that's my mission here, isn't it, so far, listening to the last 3 minutes? Reverse AFC Power Rankings, 16.
I'm going to go Indianapolis.
Indianapolis. You know, Indianapolis.
just
stop.
Cut it out, Indianapolis.
I was surprised.
Starter
today.
For the whole season, by
That's
the way.
That's the worst part. That's
what
the worst part.
What are we even doing here? I mean, what? What are you doing here? How bad must Anthony Richardson be at everything?
I know.
Talking, communicating, like just being, what? Is he just non-functional human being? I don't understand it.
I shouldn't have wavered the whole time. The guy's key word, this coach, Steichen, was consistency. That's what he wanted. Even if that means consistently mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's the same, he wants it. And today, when he made the announcement, he said that very thing. I told you guys, consistency. And that's why we're doing this. And, you know, that's just absolutely backwards. A team like that, the guys I saw today, he's started 69 games. Daniel Jones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what do we need to figure out? And, you know, you want consistency so you can go 6-11 or something? Like, where does that get you? You have to shoot for the upside, I think. But, you know, right away you got to maybe off the field, and that's been part of the Richardson story, too, just, you know, and on the field, but just, like, strange behavior or whatever it is. I don't want to be wrong there. It's just you're saying, does there have to be something? And maybe there does. But He made one throw in their last game that was unbelievably good to Mitchell. Yeah, well, he didn't do it every time, so he was inconsistent, I guess. Too inconsistent.
Warren Sharp did go pretty long today on, like, have you watched the guy play? Like, yes, the splash plays are there, but, like, he's of guys that have attempted X amount of passes or whatever over some sample size that fits Richardson, he's like last in everything.
I know. Yep.
The problem is that it's Daniel Jones. I think more so than I can understand them losing faith in Richardson. And I've always, ever since last year, I always make the point, I'm sorry to be such a broken record about it, but I think it has to be a part of it. Otherwise, I think they would keep trying to get him to be more consistent. But they have given up because I think they just don't think he knows how to do enough of the things you need to know how to do just, you know, from a just overall. The guy just doesn't get it.
Well, it's a terrible process because you had to expect this to be at least probable from the beginning. He started 15 games only, and they're done. I mean, he very rarely played even in college. That was the whole The thing about him was you got to be patient, and they've been anything but. So they deserve what they get. Plus, the owner died, and this is one where you might want ownership to be your beacon here. Like, this, we did this. If you don't want to start him, I'll get somebody who will. Like, this is the project. And to end up here instead, well, they're first in the power rankings for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
16.
Never going to be able to take that away from them, at least for this week.
At least for this week. Yeah. 15. Cleveland.
Why don't we just keep the vibes going with the, like, what are you doing exactly at quarterback thing?
Flacco, they announced.
Right. And keeping all four of them, apparently. I just don't understand keeping Kenny Pickett on the roster. I don't understand it at all.
Is there, I feel like this came up yesterday, maybe off the air. Zach, you and I and Nate talked about it, I think. Is there some reason they would say that, hoping that somebody out there is going to need a guy and they'll give them something for Kenny Pickett? I mean, I just can't fathom keeping all four of them either. I really don't get it.
That would seem possible. I don't know if you need to make the comment, but it would seem possible. It's always seemed possible to me that somebody would want him for nothing, for a backup role.
Right, a seventh or just whatever.
Same with Winston in New York, and they're saying the same thing about him, that he's staying.
Yeah.
Okay, why?
Okay, the kids look good.
Yes, that's true there. Jackson Dart.
So, you know, Flacco is not Daniel Jones. Like, the ceiling can be higher there with Flacco, but...
The floor is lower.
The floor is lower.
I mean, there are some bad turnover games, you know, coming.
Yep.
14.
I'm going to go Tennessee. I just don't think there's enough there. The reviews on Ward have been decent. Have they been decent?
Yeah, I think so.
Did he get into a second fight at a training camp practice, or was it just the one?
I only know about a mix-up with Justin Simmons. Do I have the name right? Defensive tackle. Jeffrey Simmons.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. That sounds right. That's it.
There's a safety named Justin Simmons.
Yeah. I think he's maybe still available. That's another thing that came up
yesterday.
Must
be terrible, then.
Anyway, right. So I don't know if there was a second. I saw a reference to a situation with that. But really, what even if he is decent, what are they going to do this year? 5 wins? I mean, he's not going to be C.J. Stroud.
Well, what is the ceiling? Washington last year is the ceiling. If he's good, does he have to be amazing? Like, Daniels was closer to amazing, I guess.
Yeah.
But a rookie quarterback season where he turns everything around is possible. I mean, obviously, you know, the expectations for him are not as lofty.
Right.
But still, first overall pick. I think, you know.
That would be, you're not saying necessarily, that would be stunning to me. Like, Daniels was just, to me, head and shoulders, prospect-wise, expectation-wise, a much better prospect than Ward. But
all they did, though, was put a rookie in who wasn't everybody's fit, athletically amazing, but I think of Davis Maddox saying, why does every hit he takes look like he was in a ski accident?
Right.
Like, you know,
it was a Wile E. Coyote
gonna be,
thing there, yeah.
What did I just get done saying on Richardson? Like, it was going to be maybe some sort of growth process. And nobody really liked Dan Quinn, found that all very exciting, or Kingsbury, and they won 12 games. I might find a way to bet Tennessee in that division, because I don't like anybody. That'd be a pretty good price. I don't want to pick them here either. You have, I'll say, Dolphins.
I'm going Tennessee here.
All right. 13.
I will go Dolphins with you.
Let's go. The team in the AFC East I'd least want to be is Miami. 12.
I agree with that, and I hate the Jets, but at least the Jets are, you know, starting over. Like, I think the Dolphins are preparing to start over.
Yeah, the Jets are where the Dolphins will be next year.
That is the NFL Films.
That's it.
That is the NFL Films title for the season, the 2025 season, Miami Dolphins, preparing to start over.
Yeah. I have screen grabs of maybe like 20 of those in my phone. I never know where to find them. But sometimes, like, I think of that and I want to just sort of tweet one of these pictures.
Right.
Because some of them are so funny. 12.
The Jets.
Fine.
Yeah, sure.
I'm avoiding the Raiders. 11. Can we pick Indianapolis again? No.
I think I'm going to have to pick the Raiders now.
Jacksonville.
Raiders.
It's dumb because it's the preseason. It's only the beginning, but my friend Louie was over on Saturday for a big draft, and we started with tight end premium. We started with Bowers at 103, which is about where that's about the range. I mean, that's not a reach. And we get around to 4 o'clock, and the first play of that game, maybe, or at least Raiders offensive play, you see it, was Geno Smith just sort of a long fade to Bowers, who's got a corner on him up the right sideline. He just jumps right over this guy. Mosses him almost, you know, and just brings the ball down.
I did see this. I saw a couple highlights from this game. I saw Genty, like, hospitalize that guy.
He had a run.
He just murdered that guy on the hash marks. Just bam.
I don't think they're probably very good, but there's just sort of some excitement about them.
Yeah.
Raiders at 11. 10.
I would go picks. New England.
I'm New England as well.
Okay. 9, Jacksonville?
Sure, yeah.
8?
Steelers? Yeah, Steelers. I might have argued for Steelers out of Jacksonville.
Like, yeah, it's about time.
I forgot the Steelers were there.
Going through that wide receiver 2 room is a journey. They have just nobody there.
Gabe Davis, baby. Although he's completed his visit. I saw a reference to that, so I don't know if that means he's left without signing a contract, but the sounds maybe like that. The visit's complete.
Yep. 7. Texans?
No objection to that.
What did the Chargers do that made me mad?
Oh, wait. No, I wanted the Steelers.
We got them at 8.
Oh, we did. Okay, I'm sorry.
What did the Chargers just do?
I was in the room. I don't know what happened there.
Was it the drop by Quentin Jefferson? He got hurt on that play.
Johnson?
Too.
No.
Quentin Johnson, yes.
No.
God, he got helmet to helmet, flag, no nothing. He got wrecked. That was brutal.
I forget. Something.
Being the Chargers, that's fine.
Yep.
Chargers at 6?
Sure.
Or someone else? L.A.?
Yeah, no, I'm good with them there.
I'm realizing I don't know what happened in a lot of Week 2 preseason games. I didn't watch very much. I watched a lot in Week 1, not very much in Week 2. And I don't have the lacrosse tournament excuse.
Mm.
There wasn't one.
You have a life.
Oh, yeah, that was
this
it.
This is good for your mental health.
That was
not
it.
Not doing too much.
I hiked Gore Mountain. That's why I didn't watch the preseason this weekend. That's what I was doing. I forgot. I was touching grass. 5.
Cincinnati.
Yeah, I think so. Getting tight over here with the writing.
This is a shot, I think.
No!
Is it me? Because of my right drift?
We're a team. Right drift.
Right drift.
Yes, you check the tires on this power ranking sheet. 4.
Denver.
I mean, how do you not?
Right.
I really want this to line up. It's not going to happen. It's going to be close. 3.
I'm going to say Bills.
Sorry.
Sorry.
You started the talk, and then I
it's fine.
Jumped the line.
It's the same, you know. I don't hear Baltimore and Kansas City talking today. Granted, No, I think we would have seen it if Andy Reid were sitting there going, I'm not sure who my starting blah, 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 blah is going to be. I think we'd hear about it. And so the Bills should get dinged for, you know, not having everything lined up here. And it's not even really – well, it is injury. It's not like somebody's out, but he has been out. Bishop has been out. But – you know, probably,
like
I want to ding him for that.
If the Chiefs did – they probably have some roster dilemma. I'm not sure I would know about it. I was hiking Gore Mountain on Saturday, feeling like if the Chiefs made some sort of comment today, I wouldn't hear it. I wouldn't find out. Maybe I was right. 2.
I'm gonna say Baltimore.
Kansas City.
All right, it might be one of those weeks where we remember that Kansas City wins the conference every year.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. Yeah.
I really wanted Baltimore too, so because 1 means only 2 letters, and I need the space. Chiefs
again
at 1.
With the boy.
I don't mean for you to take that personally. I hope you don't. See, we get
how
it back
else am I
bit?
Supposed to take it?
Good question. I don't know. Is there another way? Help, quick, tell me.
I don't think so. Yeah.
There's no other way?
If you hadn't screwed up the lines here, you'd have enough room to fit a 3-letter team at the bottom, but I screwed it up.
Controversial reasoning there.
It's your fault for going to Gore Mountain all the time.
That's right. Headed there next.
Like Gore Mountain's having a day.
Yeah, they are having a day.
Good for them.
You know, I won a bet on the Bills game, but I made a few bets at the same time. And is your app like this, where when you go to see the results of your bets, they're listed in the reverse order of when they were placed, not when the game happened? Like the most recent sporting event I bet on was Bills Bears, but it was like down the list because I bet that at the same time or right about the same time as other games that it happened earlier.
No, I'm pretty sure mine go in the order that they're settled.
Okay, that's better.
But it's often, you know, it's four games at once.
Yeah.
So, but as soon as like one piece of it loses, it's in there as settled. Like you lost.
Yeah, you do parlays.
Right.
And I don't.
Right.
But I'm just like, where I saw it in the balance, but I didn't see it on the scroll down.
Yeah. They hid it from you.
Just doesn't really make sense that that would be the order, right?
Right. Yeah.
That's a different app. It's not FanDuel.
Yeah.
In this case.
Well, there's your problem.
that might be right. The Blue Jays are in Pittsburgh tonight. Hopefully it's not raining like it is here.
And didn't look. Yeah, I don't know.
That'll be a game we can watch. We get the Pirates these days.
Yeah, the Pirates are on the Fubo, so yeah.
Good.
There's a game on Apple TV tonight, too. Who are the Phillies playing?
No idea.
Phillies and Mariners, it is.
Oh, throw out the record books.
They've never played before.
Phillies and Mariners. I've never thought about them together.
Because they've never played.
I've never thought about the Phillies and Mariners. Have they ever made a trade? I can't think of any sort of commonality between the Phillies and the Mariners. But they probably exist. Sal was on earlier. He would know. We talked to him about today's Bills practice and some interesting roster stuff. Couldn't have done better there to discuss, as we did with Sal Capaccio. That's next here on WGR.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I got a speeding ticket in the mail yesterday.
In the mail?
Yeah. I think I'm going to just ignore it.
It's Mike Shope.
Where was this?
Spain.
And the Bulldog.
I think if I just lay low, I think I'll get away with it.
Not mention it on the air?
Definitely don't want to talk about it on the air.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I like the sound of this more and more as we go. I'm an outlaw.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
No change to that one?
No.
To this point?
No, it's been
over a year.
Many months since I've received any correspondence from the authorities on the matter.
You probably could just claim that you couldn't read it. Or do they send that in English to a person in the United States?
It was in English. Yeah, I don't have any plausible deniability on that front.
That's out there.
I still have the two notices. First one showed up 3 or 4 months after we'd been there, and then 3 or 4 months after that, a follow-up, and nothing since.
Sigmund Bloom, any experience with traffic violations from other continents, and then how to proceed?
Not other continents, although sometimes Ohio seems like another continent.
My story is getting a speeding ticket in North Carolina when I was in my early 20s and getting advice from friends, don't worry about it, it's a different state. And then eventually going to renew my license and being told it had been suspended for a long time. And I didn't even know it. That's what you get for not opening the mail, right? Sigmund Bloom would never be so casual. He is from footballguys.com and joins us now on the West Her Hotline. I want to apologize for roping you in here, where you just sort of, you know, politely reached out to me with a couple of Bills thoughts. And, of course, what do I have to do? I have to tie you up for 20 minutes.
Oh, I always look forward to this. I'm always look forward to spending time with my friends and spending time with the good people of Buffalo.
Good. Well, that's nice of you to say. Dalton Kincaid was one of your questions. You know, what are the vibes? Is there a chance, especially maybe with Shakir out for a little bit, that Kincaid can pop? He gets hurt again today, Sigmund, after your question. I don't know how serious, but he stopped practicing after taking a hit. Is it fair to say it's becoming much of the story, at least, with Kincaid? If it's not connected and it's not worth sort of making a big conclusion about, we're often, though, talking about his durability. The offseason came, and the Bills GM talked about strength being a priority for Kincaid in the offseason. I also don't know if what's happened here so far this summer is any sort of sign of concern on that front. So what are you doing?
Yeah, I think that the pattern is clear that we may never see, at least Kyle Pitts in his rookie year showed us something that maybe implied a bigger career was coming, but Dalton Kincaid really hasn't had even a signature moment yet. And it's not just staying healthy. I think it is when he has been healthy, or as healthy as he's been, he hasn't influenced the game the way a first rounder would. You know, he's looking like roughly like a Hayden Hurst in terms of first round tight end impact, and he's going to go down for being the player that the Ravens took ahead of Lamar Jackson. And I think you're right with Khalil Shakir hurt, that's the moment that Kincaid, I think, is supposed to show how wise the Bills were for taking him in the first round, really as a pure receiving tight end, and it just hasn't materialized. And the question I showed up to ask you about today, Mike, was, you know, we're starting to feel a little pessimistic when we look at all the injuries piling up, and maybe a reversion to the Bills passing game that can be kind of frustrating at times, at least to begin the season.
I'm not really there. I have a theory about this, that because teams are so careful with players, and this could include Kincaid, that they're sitting down for not very much. And I think the way, for one example, Sean McDermott has talked about Khalil Shakir and even Joe Brady doing so, sounds like they're not really worried about him. Max Harrison at corner, I think, is a different deal. But I think there might be, we've had so many examples, Sigmund, already this summer of guys, you know, it's not just the cart that we all make fun of now, but just, you know, something happens, they leave practice, and then teams are a little bit cautious, but they prove to be okay. So I don't know that the Bills have an epidemic here, I guess I would say.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I do think, though, there is more fire than just smoke to the idea that, you know, they're looking at their receivers past the third or fourth receiver. And I know Joe Buscaglia just ran a piece saying, hey, Curtis Samuel's on the roster bubble, even though he's guaranteed almost $7 million. And it sounds like Elijah Moore can be a useful piece, but not necessarily an impact piece. And we know how much Josh Allen relies on Khalil Shakir. So I think it only potentially becomes a problem if Shakir aggravates that ankle injury when he gets back on the field, or we see that he's playing, but he's playing through it. And that might become a problem more on third downs. But then maybe we'll just get back to Josh Allen hero ball, which is at least entertaining.
Right. My read here, for what it's worth, I don't have to be correct about this, is similar to Mike. I think they're just being very careful with Shakir. At this point, Sigmund, it would stun me if we heard at some point over the next few weeks that he's in doubt at all for the opener. So I don't think there's anything to be worried about there. That's a guy that's a very known commodity. I don't think, you know, anyone can use, of course, reps and practice and whatever, but they know who he is and what he is. His chemistry with Allen is undeniable. So it's not like that's a guy. He's in a very different boat than, say, a guy like Curtis Samuel, who has not had a lot of time in practice here in the summers anyway, the 2 years he's been here. And last year, an injury sort of, I don't know, took him out of the front three-fourths of the season, basically. He was somewhat productive at the end. So, yeah, like I hear the Vikings are looking to trade for a receiver, or the Jets, and I just think, what do I have to give you in addition to Samuel to get you to take the contract? Because there's big savings there for the Bills if they could find a partner.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe the real headline here is just how important Shakir is, and how they're putting him in bubble wrap, because as he's progressing as a player and that with that chemistry and that relationship, and there's some actionable fantasy football advice here that, you know, you buy the dip. And if he hadn't had that ankle injury, maybe we'd be buzzing about how he's going to take a step up to, you know, an Amon-Ra St. Brown kind of level this year.
Shakir on underdog ADP is pick 83, so end of 7. Keon Coleman less than a round later at 91. Bulldog, for one, is in on Coleman. And the Kincaid bullish argument for Kincaid applies to Coleman almost identically.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, could you talk yourself into him?
Yeah, I think that was the plan, right? I mean, we've heard from multiple sources now that was the plan. It was that Keon Coleman could turn into a big slot and not just do damage as a contested catch guy or someone on the boundary, but do damage after the catch and really learn the big slot position. So that he then becomes the guy that if Shakir is eased in or Shakir has some sort of setback with his ankle, that you know, he's in the crosshairs as a guy that the offense is really going to rely on, and he could show in year two that he's ready for that.
Yeah, a lot of the buzz around the team this summer, to my eyes and ears, has read like they're, I don't want to say they're banking on Coleman, but that there's progress, right? That his route running has improved. The coordinator used the same phrasing that our Sal Capaccio, our beat guy, used, I don't know, 3 weeks ago when I asked him, what looks different about Coleman year one to year two? And Sal used the word intentional. Like he's working more on setting up what he's doing with his feet and his hands and that sort of stuff. And Joe Brady today used that same phrasing talking about Coleman. So, and furthermore, the quarterback this week, Josh Allen, talked about Coleman. And of course he's raving about him and everyone's raving about everyone on every team this time of the year. But within that did say, we're going to be asking him to work inside and outside, which they've also said about Shakir off of right. The year he had last year. And so if there's a little more interchangeability there, maybe that's something that can spring Coleman, provided they can trust, you know, they're not wasting Shakir if he lines up outside.
Yeah, I think just real briefly, I think with Bobby Peters, you know, there's a lot of really good football theoreticians and people that are really looking at the big picture. And, you know, there's some talk that you're going to see more formations where receivers are spread out and not truly in a cluster. I mean, in a cluster, but not truly in a bunch formation. And then you won't really have to buy space for receivers, and everybody will have that kind of inside-outside versatility because defenses can't pattern match it for zone, and you can easily run rub routes for man coverage. So that kind of sounds like what the Bills have the personnel to pull off if they want to do it.
So a year ago, I probably would have said the same thing. Drafting Josh Allen in fantasy as like quarterback one, which is where he ranks, all right, somebody has to go with him, especially if he's going to contend for an MVP award, which he'd done in previous years. What happens? He wins, but nobody really goes with him. It's James Cook, Sigmund, and his 18 total touchdowns in the regular season. Can you see anything close to that happening again? The question you asked on Cook, I think, is a common one, which is, does his new contract mean he'll be used more? You'll have a more central, important role, more than 47% of the snaps. I tend to think not, but I don't know.
I don't know if he'll be used more by design, but I do think that he's a signature core player in this offense, and he's a player that I could easily see Josh Allen relying on, and maybe part of the answer of if they continue to have injury problems with Kincaid. If this offense lacks that dimension, the vertical dimension that they hope that Curtis Samuel might provide, that James Cook could just be one of those guys that keeps the chains moving and ends up being used more than they designed because he's just really good. I mean, it's what gave them the confidence to sign him to the extension in the first place.
With Sigmund Bloom here on the Wester Hotline, footballguys.com. You can watch Sigmund on various podcasts, including his very popular series On the Couch, which I've been honored to take part in once before. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. What in terms of Allen and fantasy drafts, you know, round three, Lamar Jackson's right there. Daniels Hurts to follow into round four. Do you like drafting, say, more than the average amount of those guys and building teams around them, or would you rather wait?
I like Hurts this year. I think that one of the hacks in fantasy football this year, and you're seeing a little bit of it, you know, Saquon Barkley was the clear number one running back, and Bijan Robinson's going ahead of him. I don't think the Eagles are going to have everything line up perfectly. The stat I keep coming back to is, I think, it was something like 53 pass attempts trailing in the second half. And I just think you're not going to see everything line up you're going to see more passing volume. I think that Jalen Hurts also, there were times he was missing Devontae Smith. He was missing A.J. Brown, although watch A.J. Brown in this hamstring situation. But I think you're going to see a more balanced offense under Kevin Fatullo, the new offensive coordinator with Kellen Moore down here. So I think if you're going to take a quarterback early, I like waiting on Jalen Hurts or just taking Lamar Jackson because of the Ravens line was young and really put together on the fly in camp last year, how it was going to work out. Now they can gel. You add DeAndre Hopkins. Couldn't you see DeAndre Hopkins changing the outcome of a few games last year? You know, maybe a few games that Bills fans watch. You know, I think this is a game, a situation where the Ravens offense could also take a step forward from an already high perch.
While we're on AFC contending teams, what are you inclined to do with the Chiefs this year? It's been talked about a lot and written about a lot that their offense has not been what it had been earlier in Mahomes' career. Part of me, the part of me that's winning right now, the argument I'm having about the Chiefs is that I sense like a 5,000-yard, 40-touchdown season incoming from Mahomes and Andy Reid. What do you think about the Chiefs?
The key player in this conversation, I think, is Josh Simmons, their first-round pick. And, you know, he was – a lot of people thought this was a pretty good offensive tackle draft. But some thought that he was the best in the draft, but he had, I believe, a torn patellar tendon last year at Ohio State. Well, he shows up ready to play in training camp, and it sounds like he's on track to start week one. And the last we saw the Chiefs, spectacularly imploding, it was because of the offensive line. So you add a left tackle who can stabilize this line right away. And I think Juwan Taylor, the right tackle, was playing through injuries. He has said a lot worse than they let on last year. So if that is firmed up, another thing that makes me excited about this offense is that Jalen Royals, their fourth-round pick, it sounds like could be the rare player that Andy Reid trusts as a rookie and gives them some redundancy, because that's the other thing we saw last year was the offensive wide receiver depth chart fell apart for them. Then they lost a lot of dimensions in that passing game. So I'm definitely open to that, and I think that this is an offense. On the other side of it, you know, we've been expecting this for a while, and they don't necessarily need to win games 33-30 with the defense they have. So we might just have Lucy pull the football away again.
It's possible that I'm not recalling this correctly, but it felt like around the draft, like the day after the first round, we're in here doing our show, and it felt like the Chiefs were playing the long game. Like that Simmons, it was not expected that he'd be ready for the start of camp even, and therefore the beginning of the season might be in doubt. Maybe he can help them by the bye or that kind of stuff. And right from the start, OTAs, like he's there and he's 100%, and that just has not changed. So I don't know if they knew something that the people talking about the draft when it was happening didn't know, or if they just got lucky. But either way, I think it's a huge development for them.
Yeah. We don't need the Chiefs getting lucky. We don't need that anymore.
No, that's never happened. Certainly has never happened. Sigmund, one of the more exciting, fun aspects of fantasy drafts as we get near the season is, of course, the rookies. And it was such a rich year for running backs. I'm seeing, they're getting enough hype or even making plays in terms of Travion Henderson. I'm thinking R.J. Harvey as well. Of course, Bill Krosky Merritt in Washington. Like, this is somewhat common, but maybe there's a little bit more of it than usual where you're seeing the rookie hype. Famously Bulldog on Monday night in the main event. A few friends and I took Henderson at 303. Many are still buzzing about that. How are you playing these rookies?
Yeah, I think you have to be in on at least a few. You might differ in which ones, but you had some really good intersections of talent and a situation, and some of these already look like they're bearing fruit. Krosky Merritt, you mentioned, Brian Robinson, almost certainly not going to be with Washington. I'll mention Kyle Manungai, who from all outward indications has passed Roschon Johnson. And we've already heard Ben Johnson say, we're going to be able to trust this guy this fall. That's big for a seventh-round rookie. We've already seen Rashard Smith. I think it's clear he's going to make the team. Sounds like Eliza Mitchell has not done enough to prove that he deserves a spot on the team. And then how quickly does Rashard Smith maybe move into that Jerick McKinnon role. He has a very similar skill set to McKinnon, and it maybe ends up being like McKinnon was, like more valuable than the early down running back in Isaiah Pacheco, if Isaiah Pacheco can stay healthy. So you know, these seventh round running backs are on the scene and ready to make an impact this year. You know, we're going to watch Woody Marks in Houston. You know, maybe he's kind of the none of the above answer with the aging and disappointing running backs that they have. And then as the season goes on, I'm sure they're going to be more names. So that is absolutely something that should be part of your plan, at least one or two rookie running backs near the end of your draft.
And Football Guys is invaluable at sort of tracking all this on a day-to-day basis. One of the first things I remember learning from you is the concept of rational coaching. And like Woody Marks with Houston, you know, it didn't. They drafted him, and they even traded up. They traded a future pick to get him. So you're considering a few things here. You're considering like what the team has at stake, and you know, a lot of analysts have their own player takes, like watching these guys in college and thinking, you know, good or bad of them. But it's really more important what the team thinks. And here's a player that was not everybody's favorite prospect, Marks. I mean, he's got a fun story with going as Woody from Toy Story for Halloween 7 years in a row and adopting the name. But, you know, whether you think a person thinks he's a good player or not can almost be secondary to what the team might be incentivized to do.
And what the fit is, too, because that's the thing about you know, a player like Kyle Mononga is not an impressive player in terms of long speed or phone booth quicks. But like Jamal Williams, who Ben Johnson had success with in Detroit, and also they had him in for a visit this summer in Chicago, he's just assignment sound and hard-nosed and no-nonsense runner. And yeah, I think that you're going to see the Bears want to have a very diverse run game, and I think that he's going to be better than DeAndre Swift on zone runs. I think you're going to see him have a fit. So, you know, where Mononga on a different team, you know, maybe would be on the roster bubble. I think he has exactly what Ben Johnson likes. And I think there are other rookies. You know, Jordan James is interesting with the broken finger. I know Isaac Garendo's back in practice, but if Christian McCaffrey goes down, he's another one that's just super solid. And Kyle Shanahan loves running backs that understand how to run in his system. I think Jordan James we might be hearing about during the season in San Francisco.
Like it. Broken finger, is it, early in camp here, but maybe not out for too long. You have a favorite before you go, Subin, quickly? You have a favorite first-round pick?
Oh, man. I'll tell you this. Christian McCaffrey, I want to talk myself out of taking him, and I'm finding myself feeling strangely serene about the summer that he's had and having trouble coming up with a reason that he won't be back to the player he was. He's actually looked like that player now in those training camp clips. And it's the kind of pick that I think that either he makes your season as the pick at 5 or 6 or 7, or you have a fun challenge and you rouse the troops and you say, we're going to overcome this if McCaffrey goes down again. And again, just remember the name Jordan James.
Thank you, Sigmund. Great to talk to you as always. Enjoy the season. I know you will.
Always look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Footballguys.com. They have a, I wanted to say this with Sigmund on the line and he's gone, but they have so many good writers.
Good job.
I know, right? I had one job and that was it. I didn't do it. One guy I'm really high on is a guy named Dan Hendry, who writes really smart stuff, but also I know is a player. Like the guys who are also players. You know, a lot of us do the talking, but skin in the game. And he's won big. So he's one of, I think, their finest at Football Guys. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, here at 803-0550. What have we been into today? Some familiar topics. Curtis Samuel. We've talked about James Cook so much, not in the last couple of days, but the question about his usage given the contract is an interesting conversation. Like, does that change? And how the Bills sort of approach that. We'll talk about that as well. Sal will join us at 5. Lines are open for your calls here on WGR.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Filling up right behind the Bills bench right now with their flags and their hey, 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 hey.
Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
Hey, hey,
hey. Let's go Buffalo chant.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Happy to have you with us here on a Friday afternoon. I am the Bulldog. Mike Shope is off today along with Zach Jones here in our Amherst studios. We are happy to welcome on time to the show, as always, our Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline live from Tampa, where the Bills will play the Bucks tomorrow in the preseason finale kickoff a little after 7:30 or so. Sal, good afternoon. I'm sorry about the Yankees. Sorry, not sorry. I'm back on the Red Sox bandwagon. I went to a game again, so I have a new hat and everything. I'm ready to go.
You had to start with that, didn't you? I thought that might happen. I wasn't really totally sure.
I mean, yeah, I'm back. Looking. I'm back, baby. Yeah. I'm back.
Yanks are still a half game up on the Sox, and there are three more to play here. I did tell you yesterday I was a little worried because of them getting back so late after that Tampa trip, you know?
Yeah, no question. But I've got scoreboard for today. I don't know. I won't talk to you for a few weeks now, or at least a couple of weeks. I'm gone until after Labor Day, after today. So I got to get it in now while I can. We'll see if we can, maybe win this series and get back in second place behind the Blue Jays. There. Do you think the Jays have what it takes to win the division?
I do think they have what it takes to win the division, but I still think that they are a team that's playing a little above their heads right now, or have played above their heads. I mean, they were so good for so long. But I think it also might be because right now the Yankees and Red Sox both don't have what maybe we thought either of them had at this point. Yeah, but the Jays are a good team, and they can, especially offensively, they can really hit. And now their pitching's coming around too lately, but we'll see. I mean, they've had a little bit of struggle lately, so... You know, we'll see where it goes. By the way, Bulldog, my hotel room, I got to tell you, I'm looking out. Have you've been to Tampa, I assume, right? Have you ever been to MLA Arena where the Lightning play?
I have not. And I've not really been, I mean, not for many years. I was in Tampa as a kid, I think. But my wife and I went, we were in Hudson, Florida, maybe, which is, I don't know, an hour or so from Tampa, I think, up the coast. So I have not spent time in Tampa. So, no, I've never been to the hockey rink.
Okay, well, I am literally looking from my room out into the plaza. It is I have to be 50 yards away from the arena itself. It's crazy. It's kind of like Harbor Center, right? That
right.
kind of thing. It's a deal right there where it's right there. It's a really good setup, by the way. And we came here 2 out of the last 3 years. I've been to MLA to watch the Sabres play the Lightning because it just so happened it was during break that we could line that up with a trip down here. And I just love the way they kind of lay this out, and there's so much going on. There's something going on in the arena tonight. I'm not sure what it is. There's people in the plaza. They're not wearing Lightning jerseys, so I know there's no Lightning game tonight.
I think you're probably on the money on that. So, Sal, what do we don't know any more than we knew yesterday at this time. I heard your conversation with Mike yesterday, and I heard you talking to Sneaky Joe this morning about it. We're going to probably be waiting until after the game tomorrow to hear anything about the severity of Tre'Davious White's injury. Is that right?
Probably. I think there's a chance you hear something tomorrow before the game. I think there's a chance that, you know, you could hear something on the broadcast for sure, whether that's radio or television. You know, might get some clues on whether or not he's actually at the game or not. And that could clue you in. So I wouldn't be stunned. I was trying to remember. He got the fine on Max Hairston when all that went down, because there was a real good like day and a half maybe of not knowing. And then it was probably about 48 hours, maybe a little bit less. So I wouldn't be surprised that that's the case. So I think you could find out tomorrow, but you're right. After the game would be, I think at the very latest, I would say, when Sean McDermott speaks after the game.
It does really bring into focus just how quick it gets thin, right? I mean, we know Hairston's out. At least, you know, the start of the season is in doubt for him at this point. I think, I don't know, I might guess that he ends up on IR to start the year, but we'll see. We don't know that at this point. But boy, after White, we're into Dane Jackson, and I got a guy calling me last segment saying, just play one of the kids, Daquan Hardy or somebody, and I'm like, holy cow. I heard your conversation with Joe this morning about Dane Jackson, and pretty interesting how you laid out what could be a starting job or not on the team, maybe depending on how seriously or not Tre'Davious White is hurt.
That's right. To me, it's like all or nothing with Dane Jackson. I think if everybody's healthy, I'm doing my 53-man roster. I don't have Dane Jackson on the team. I think he actually is kind of a perfect practice squad veteran at cornerback, right? Where a guy that you just have him on the practice squad, and when you need him, you can call him up. If something happens to a guy on a Sunday and you got a Thursday game, something happens during the week on a Wednesday, and you're like, hey, we gotta have somebody who can plug and play. He knows the system. You bring him up, and you get by through the game. I think he's perfect for that. I don't think that he's a guy that has shown me enough that he warrants necessarily a 53-man roster spot or to be a starter. That said, with Tre'Davious White, if he is out for any length of time, knowing that Max Harrison is most likely out for a little while, I don't think you have another option to start outside other than Jamarcus Ingram. But Jamarcus Ingram does a lot of things for this team. He is an outside corner. He's a nickel corner. He's a dime safety. You allow him to be able to use all of those roles because Dane just doesn't have all those roles. Jamarcus is also special teams, big time on special teams. So to me, that's where you would get to. Dane Jackson would then be the starter on the outside. You let Jamarcus play all his other roles. So I think it's kind of it's an all or nothing proposition here if you're looking at that. The guy that is really interesting here for me is Dorian Strong. Now, the Bills, and I say that not as a starter, but that could impact the numbers. Because if the Bills feel that they can sneak by Dorian Strong and get him through waivers into the practice squad, then maybe you do get Dane Jackson on the 53-man roster. But I don't know if they feel that. That's going to be tough. You don't want to see a six-round pick get claimed by another team. You could waive him and still get him back. I mean, you know, a lot of times that happens, but the Bills lost Alex Austin a couple of years ago to the Patriots when they did that. They've lost other players when they've done that. They've also waived. I mean, hey, Dane Jackson's a great example. He actually got cut his first year in Buffalo, and he got put on the practice squad. So I just don't know where that fits in and how they want to do that.
Yeah. How likely do you think it is that they look outside? Again, depending. We don't know how seriously White is hurt, but, you know, the top end of the list is Rasul Douglas and Stephon Gilmore. As far as guys that are available right now, Tuesday could bring an opportunity for them to view someone that gets released. Maybe they could even preemptively trade for someone that's going to get released by a team. That doesn't have to mean that the player is, you know, if it's a veteran, can't play. Maybe he's just getting squeezed out by a younger, cheaper guy. I would think the Bills are going to be turning over every stone ahead of Tuesday's cutdown day.
No doubt about that. We've seen several trades around the league already, specifically wide receivers, a couple defensive tackles. Harrison Phillips, you know, gets traded from the Vikings to the Jets, right? That's what teams are doing right now. They're looking, and, you know, Brandon Bean historically has, you know, had some trades, not maybe every year, but he seems to have a deal or two at the end of the third game and into Tuesday, and that's this weekend. So I'm sure it's already something that's on the table looking around. Now you add into this, if there's an injury, I do think that's something you look at. But if you want to go the free agent route, sure. I mean, I think Rasul Douglas to me would be the first guy that you would think of. The question is, how much does Rasul Douglas want to play football, and can you fit him under the cap? Because if he's like, yeah, I'm playing for $3-4 million, I don't think you do that, right? You're looking for probably a vet minimum type of deal with somebody. One of the things that you have to keep in mind too, Bulldog, and people might not know this, but if you're a vested veteran and you've been in the league 4 years, if you're on the week one roster, your base salary is guaranteed for the season, right? So a lot of times guys, even if they want somebody, they don't want to do it until after week one, teams, right? Because you don't want to guarantee that base salary in the case you move on. But in this case, you might have to do that. So what do you do in this situation? Do you go and get a guy that, you know, if he's going to cost a little more? And I don't know, you know, what they feel. Why has Rasul Douglas not been on a team? Is it because he's asking for more money than people want to give? Or is it simply that people, you know, teams just don't think he's quite the same player? Because let's be honest, he truly kind of wasn't last year, versus what he was the first half year in Buffalo.
I definitely agree with that. That's a name and it's familiarity, and maybe you'd feel better about that than Dane Jackson. But yeah, I felt like last year, you know, I wasn't eager for them to bring Douglas back, and I got to tell you, I don't know that I'd be eager to do it now, even in a pinch. I would understand if they landed there, but yeah, I felt like last year he was a weak link out there for them.
Yeah, I think that, weak link is interesting, right? It seems like, yeah, he wasn't a guy making plays. Maybe it's because I think what happened was he was so good in those, what, eight games he played for the Bills the year before.
Yeah.
And he made big plays and he intercepted the ball and he was just so good on the football that I think the expectations were a little maybe out of whack and out of line for him last year. But he also didn't have a great year. But I think that coincided with us going, well, where's these plays that you were making the year before, right?
Yeah.
So I do think that that's something. And you know, he is a little bit older. So it is. And Stephon Gilmore is even older than him, I believe. So is he a guy out there that you would look at as well? Maybe. I think first and foremost, we have to see where is Tre'Davious White. Now, is it something really long term? Then they're going to have to probably add some numbers. Is it something that, he'll be fine in a few days? Then you're probably not looking at that. Is it something where, well, he's okay, but it might bleed into the regular season? Then I think that's where you're in a quandary.
Yeah, they're going to might have to really massage that moving in. All right, well, we'll know more when we know more. Like you're saying, maybe during pregame or on the broadcast. If not, certainly the finish line would be McDermott talking postgame after this game with the Bucks. Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline here with me in Buffalo. Sal's in Tampa, Bills and Bucks tomorrow at 7:30. Pregame show gets rolling around 2. The hottest take I've got today, Sal, involves Curtis Samuel. I think I would like to see him play. I don't know. I missed yesterday, so I don't know if he was addressed specifically as far as playing time for this game tomorrow. But if he can play, I would like to see him play, I don't know, 20 to 30 snaps. I don't care about production. I don't care who's throwing him the ball. I just want him to prove to them that he can get on the field and get through a game and be healthy. Because I feel like that's the biggest question with him. I think if he's healthy and participating in all these practices, I don't think there's any question about his roster spot. But I'm worried about him having another injury-riddled season. So I'd like to see him play just to show that he can get through a game and get through it healthy. If he gets hurt, I mean, well, the book writes itself. What do you think they should do with Samuel tomorrow?
I agree 100% with you, and I think the organization feels the same, which is we want to see him be able to be healthy, get through some games. And the reason I say that is I'll just echo what Sean McDermott said this week, that he wanted to see him get through some practices, and he did, and he looked good, and he felt that he was on the right track and looking good. But I don't think that guarantees that he's just going to, you know, back it off maybe tomorrow and not play him. I would like to see him play tomorrow. I would like the same thing. So we're on the same page here. I still think that Curtis Samuel, if they feel he's healthy, is on this football team, even though he hasn't been out there a lot, shown a ton because of it. I think if Curtis Samuel is healthy, they probably are going to keep him on the football team. There are financial ramifications. Now, you actually would save $500,000 if you move off him, but you'd have a $7 million-plus dead cap hit, meaning he's counting that money whether he's on the roster or not, right? So a lot of times you just don't want to say, well, he's not on the roster and we're going to pay that money and we're going to count that money. But you're counting that money either way. I think that that would be the plan for him. I also think that, you know, it's if you look down the roster, sure, we can all love Tyrell Shavers and what he's put together here, right? But I think that the way the Bills roster looks right now, I think Curtis Samuel still fits into that top five, to be quite honest with you. And I think Tyrell Shavers is right there. And I think Elijah Moore still fits in. To me, the top five are still the top five they've kind of always been, which is Khalil Shakir, Keon Coleman, Josh Palmer. And then I think it's Elijah Moore and Curtis Samuel, or whatever order you want to say. And I think Tyrell Shavers is still right there, even Laviska Shenault, as that extra guy that you're debating keeping. It's not, to me, should we keep Tyrell Shavers over Curtis Samuel. It's simply Curtis Samuel against himself. And that's what you're saying, right, too? I agree.
Yeah,
it's,
basically.
This guy's fighting himself for a roster spot. He's not fighting Tyrell Shavers, because if he's healthy, I think he's clearly on the team.
Yeah, I don't have any question about that. I wonder, I don't know, it's been a while since we've talked like this. I mean, could they play him a lot tomorrow and see him prove that he's healthy and then maybe find a trade partner? You know, like I send whether it's some kind of pick swap or something. And really, it's not about the return. It's about, because that alleviates the dead money, I believe, right? If you can trade him, I think you get the full savings there. That could be a scenario. But again, like that's, if he's healthy, maybe you want to keep him and have him for yourself. But I don't know. I wouldn't rule out a team getting their interest piqued if he plays in this game and, you know, looks decent.
I wouldn't either. You know, I think that you'd have to have that happen first and foremost, of course. Remember, do you remember when they traded Sammy Watkins? That's what happened. They literally threw the ball to Sammy Watkins like three of the first four plays, and you're like, oh, okay, this is great. And then they traded him the next day. You're like, well, the team who they traded him to, the Rams wanted to make sure he was healthy. He's out there and he's playing. And sure enough, he was, and they made the deal. So I could see something like that. I think, though, in this case, a little bit older of a wide receiver, obviously, than that case. He's making pretty good salary. So I still think it's tough, though. Yes, I think you'd have to show that. But I think it would still be a tough deal for another team to say, you know what, we'll go out and we'll make that deal, because that team's still got to make – they have to trust that he would stay healthy even if they see he's healthy.
Right.
Right? So I don't know if you would want to do that. And, I think at the end of the day, the Bills still would love to have Curtis Samuel for the role they envisioned him for. There may be frustration from all sides about him not being on the field and his availability, and I get that, and that's real. But I do think that, you know, Joe Brady wanted Curtis Samuel on this team for a reason, and the Bills have Curtis Samuel on this team for a reason. And if he's healthy, I still think that they have a clear vision for him and his role in this offense.
Sal, what else is up for grabs tomorrow, if anything? Like, who needs a good day tomorrow to solidify a spot? I mean, depth linebackers. I liked how Jimmy Charlo was featured in Hard Knocks. Am I saying his name correctly? I hope I am. Yep. Is he live to make the roster as a special teams depth linebacker, you think?
I don't think so. I think he's live for a practice squad spot, though.
Okay.
And that matters to a lot of these guys, right? Like, hey, I'm not making the 53, but if I can get on the practice squad and be with this team every day and show them what I can do every single day, then you never know when you get an opportunity to be called on to the big club, right? So I do think he's live for that. I just think there's too many numbers there, and he came in a little bit late. He made a couple nice plays, that's right, but how much can you, you know, really rely on that versus what you have? So it's a great story. I love that. But I don't think he's live for a roster spot. I know obviously Cole Bishop is a starter, but I think he has to show, I'll say it the way you did with Curtis Samuel, show he can get through a game healthy. He did last week, but yeah, you don't have to have him play the whole game, but you have to at least see him play again. You know, he needs more reps. Sean has talked about that a little bit. Cole Bishop is the starting safety on this team. The only way he's not, I think, is if there was to be another injury, but I think he has to still have some reps, and he has to go out there and he has to get a little bit more playing time before all of this. I think on the offensive line, that's a big one I'm looking at right now, because I still look at it and say, okay, you have some injuries here. Now you have two tackles in concussion protocol. You have Tylon Grable and Travis Clayton. So they'll probably be on the team, but you know, they're not gonna be able to play tomorrow. That matters because it's opening the door. Ryan Vandermark had a tough day last week. There's no doubt about that. Do they like Chase Lunt enough? He has now shown some versatility. I don't think it's gone great for him, but at the same time, by the fact that he's playing a little bit more and everywhere, he's showing some versatility. We know how much they like that. Alec Anderson is clearly on the team, but is he your backup center? Because Cedric Van Pran Granger is probably not going to be available for several weeks. I think he stays on PUP. So the guy I'm looking at is Kendrick Green. I know it's a name that people don't talk about a lot, but Kendrick Green to me could make this roster. He might be the backup center. And then you free Alec Anderson up to be that swing interior guy for you.
Yep. Is there anyone – you mentioned Chenault earlier. I'm sorry to be jumping around on you. Mm-hmm. But I've noticed, like, he's getting run on coverage units. He's been returning kickoffs. He's gotten a look at punt returner as well. Is there a decision to be made between he and last year's return man, Brandon Codrington, you think?
There could be. I'll still maintain what I've said all along. I believe Brandon Codrington is the main punt returner on this team, and he's on the team. We all know the issue, though, is that he doesn't really provide anything for you on the defensive end. You know what Brandon Codrington is? He's a, oh my God, let's get through the end of this game. We need somebody, put Brandon Codrington in guy on defense. That's what he is, right? He's not going to be a guy that you're going to really put in as an actual depth piece, you know, in situations that you need someone there. But I still think he's the number one punt returner on this team. I have seen nothing through training camp or preseason to show me otherwise, that he is not the number one punt returner. And it would be a heck of a deal if they suddenly decided someone else would be, because we know how much they value that spot. Heck, the reason he's on this team is because at the end of last year, they did not trust Daquan Hardy to be that guy. So they traded for Brandon Codrington. So let's get to Chenault. Chenault isn't going to be the punt returner on this team. And he did get one in a game, but he's still very, very raw there. And I just don't think the Bills would trust that. So, but they do really love his kick return ability. The question for Laviska Shenault is going to be, can he offer enough outside of that? And that's what you just said. He could maybe be a gunner. He could cover kicks. but also maybe as a wide receiver. Can he offer a little bit for you in that regard? And I just don't know what the numbers at wide receiver. So
yeah,
I think he's probably on the outside looking in and a practice squad guy. But I do think there's a world we live in where Laviska Shenault makes this team. And I even think there's a very, very small world we live in where maybe both him and Brandon Codrington make this team.
Yeah, that seems nuts to me to have two guys that are – well, you said it. I mean, they would have to have a role for Shenault in the offense mm-hmm. to some extent, right? Because you can't really – Codrington playing defense is like – that's a – ultimate break glass in case of emergency situation.
Yes.
There. And so if I've got two guys that are here mainly for returns, that feels like maybe a bit much for my taste, but we'll see. All right. Did we hit everything? I don't want to leave anything out, Sal. I'm going to be gone a while.
I think backup quarterback is an interesting one.
Okay.
You know, and where that goes. And there's still a battle there. And I expect Shane Buechele to get plenty of time tomorrow. But what about Mike White? What about Mitch Trubisky? If they're on the field, when they're on the field, how much they play, maybe we can read into what they're thinking about that. They both had some time here. Buechele hasn't had as much time, but he's been here now for 3 years, essentially. So, you know, he'll get his shot, I think, a little bit tomorrow, probably more than a little bit. So I think backup quarterback is – and I'm only saying Buechele for tomorrow. I don't think he's factoring in the actual decision and right. being the number two quarterback. It's going to be either Mitch Trubisky or Mike White, but I wonder where they're at with that. And I do think that, you know, if one of them plays tomorrow and the other one doesn't, does that mean that they need to see a little bit more from the guy?
All right, Sal, thanks a lot for this. Enjoy your time in Tampa, and we'll catch up next week.
All right, you got it. Thanks a lot.
That's our dude Sal Capaccio on the West Hur Hotline, again live from Tampa. The Bills and Bucks play preseason game number 3, the third and final preseason game, tomorrow night, 7:30 kickoff. Pregame rolls at 2 here on WGR. Want to fill you in on some information regarding the bus accident from earlier today on the I-90. WBEN News Radio 930 AM is reporting within the last 5 minutes or so that the 90 West between Pembroke and Depew is now open. The eastbound lanes remain closed due to that bus crash. There were, at last word, 3 fatalities, many more injured. Mercy Flight has been running people, flying people to ECMC. But the 90 has reopened westbound between Pembroke and Depew. Eastbound, though, still closed from Depew to Pembroke. So, keep that in mind as you're planning your Friday night travels here. Of course, traffic along other roads, you know, east and westbound roads, Genesee Street, Main Street, a lot of traffic on those roads because, you know, it's rush hour now and the thruway has been closed and still is closed in the eastbound direction. So, please plan accordingly. 803-0550 is the number. You got any thoughts on anything Sal and I just talked about? Would love to hear from you. Lines are open. I am the Bulldog, and you're listening to...
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple. But we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.